This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. Inside, nice and warm, comfy, with no ice blinking down on your face. We're having a little sleet, not quite snow here yet in the Charlottesville area. I hope the rest of you in Central Virginia are staying cool and comfortable inside. Please drive safely if you're out there. This is 91.9 and Richmond's 103.1. Our guest today, David Toscano. For those of you who recognize the name but aren't quite sure what he does, he's the minority leader in Virginia's House of Delegates, also the state delegate representing the 57th district at Charlottesville and parts of Albemarle since 2006. Good morning, David.
Good morning. It's great to be with you.
Well, thank you for taking the time. And was it a struggle to get here from your house down to the WNRN studios?
Well, you know, as I told you, Rick, I grew up in Syracuse, New York, and, you know, sort of learning to drive in this mess was typical for me. And I've been here 30 years now, but I don't think I lost my skills on the road. Other people, however, are another issue.
That's right. It's not your skills. It's the skills or sometimes lack thereof of other people.
Absolutely.
That's right. Just because you think you're good at driving in the snow doesn't mean you are. I'm sure Rusty and I both think that we're careful and cautious, but David may have different viewpoints if he were to sit in the passenger seat with us. But we will be talking again with David Toscano. We're going to talk about some different issues regarding the state of Virginia. Some of those carry over to a national, just because David may not be your specific representative in Virginia. Again, he does represent all of Virginia in terms of being the minority leader in Virginia's House of Delegates. David, again, thank you so much for being here on a snowy, sleety Sunday. Let's jump right into it. We have, or we will soon have, a new governor here in the state of Virginia, Terry McAuliffe. Are you excited about that?
Oh, I'm very excited about that. One of the things that impressed me about Terry during the campaign is how hard he would work. I mean, he was working constantly. And after he got elected, he didn't take a vacation. He just went right into it, meeting with lots of different people from lots of different backgrounds with very different perspectives, both right and left, and trying to put together a good team that I think will be a bipartisan team that will try to get some good things done for the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Now, Virginia is, at least in the legislature, covered by the Republican. The Republican Party leads. It used to be 67 to 33, 67 Republican representatives to 33 Democratic. Is that still the number? What's the number after the recent election?
Well, after it, you know, we gained one seat, a net of one seat. So, you know, it's not like we're getting that close that fast, but we have, you know, we have 8 years to get to the majority so that redistricting doesn't put us back behind the eight ball the way it did the last time. And it is true that the House of Delegates is overwhelmingly Republican. The state Senate is an equal 20-20 split. And so you really have the classic case of divided government in Virginia, and people are going to have to work together to get things done. That's just how it is. That's what we're working with.
Well, let's talk about that, because I think one of the current issues, at least on a national perspective, and I think many people would believe that it will happen if it hasn't already happened on a state perspective, is that work blockage. Each side wanting their own laws or their own discussions about what's important and the best way to get it done. And because there's such a distinctive difference in certain areas, it's not going to get happened. We'll just be talking about it for 4 years.
Well, you know, we are very different than Washington for a couple of reasons. One is we're not a full-time legislature. You know, we have real jobs in the real world, at least most of us do. You know, I'm an attorney in real life. And so we have more contact with the people, I think, than the Congress people and senators in Washington. The other thing that's very different about Virginia is every year we have to have a balanced budget. It's constitutionally mandated. And so it forces us to do some things that are a lot different than in Washington. We can't just keep passing continuing resolutions that really don't include the passage of a full budget. The other thing about Virginia is we have two-year budgets, so we try to put something together that'll work for a couple of years. And finally, I think the ethos of Virginia tends towards more civility than in Washington. You know, it's still a risk that we can go down the partisan road, and occasionally we do that. There are some things that the Republicans in the House do simply because they can. But if we can confine them to a minimum, we can actually get some good things done. And I have an example of that when you want me to.
No, fire away.
Well, let's take last year. If someone had told me at the beginning of the session last year that we would have a bipartisan transportation bill that would have injected $1 billion extra a year into fixing our roads, building new ones, fixing our bridges, enhancing rail and public transit, I would have told them that they were crazy. And yet, by the end of the session, we had a bipartisan bill. It would not have been passed without Democrats in the House, because the Republicans in the House were not they were not in favor of it by a majority. But it did get passed. It was substantial. It got passed by the Senate. And even though Governor McDonald wasn't even that enthused about it because it raised revenue, he decided that it was good for the Commonwealth to sign the bill, and he did it. And so now we've got a lot more money in the pipeline to fix our roads and bridges and to protect our rail and public transport.
Well, that's great. And I think for many people, I'm not sure how the state citizens with the percentages of that in terms of pro or con. That happened in the last year of Governor McDonald's term. Did we have similar issues that took place and were passed in the initial 3 years, or is this something that takes place in the last year once the governor can do this and be for it without feeling outcome come back from that?
You know, it's very interesting, Rick, because one of the reasons I would have told you that the chances of passing something like that were minor is that it was proposed in the last year, and usually governors can't do much in their last year. You know, we're constitutionally mandated to have a one-term governor. And by the time he or she, well, it's always been he at this point, it gets to the fourth year, they're a lame duck. And usually they can't get much done at all. Usually the big things happen in the first and the second year of a governor's administration. Warner's sales tax increase back in 2004, Gilmore's no car tax implementation when Governor Allen came in. He implemented no parole. So those are things that would happen in the first or the second year. By the fourth, you're usually in lame duck. It was very unusual.
Our guest today, David Toscano, he's the representative of the 57th District here in the state of Virginia, also the minority leader in Virginia's House of Delegates. Stay inside, stay warm, stay dry. Give us a call a little later in the hour if you're interested. That's 434-979-0919. Your questions for David are welcome. So we're talking about the any potential work blockage between having a strong Republican legislature versus our new Democratic governor. And you mentioned how the balanced budget is constitutionally required. But some people would say that that's sort of we don't always do that the right way, because there are several mandates that come through that are put through by the state for local organizations, local governments to make those happen, but without any finance attached to them.
Oh, I think you make a very good point, Rick. It seems though every year the state imposes mandates on localities to do certain things, whether it's environmental protection or doing something in the schools, without the money attached to it. So even though we have a balanced budget from the state level, it imposes costs on localities. And as somebody like me who came out of local government, I usually vote against those measures because state local taxpayers are tremendously burdened as it is. The property tax rates, although they're not outrageously high, I mean, they affect people, especially people on fixed incomes. And so you have to really be mindful of imposing these unfunded mandates on the localities that have to be picked up by them in some way. You know, they just don't print money in the basement of City Hall or the county office building. They have to fund it using the revenues that they receive from their constituents in the forms of taxes.
I see line two ringing right now. We'll check out and see. Question for David Toscano again, 979-0919. That's 434-979-0919. David, again, continue to talk about the work blockage or my concern about what may be a work blockage. And you seem, you mentioned how this most recent term, the last term of Governor McDonald's, actually led to an important bipartisan group making this happen. Do you foresee things happening like this again in the first year of Governor McDonald's term?
Well, I think the Republicans are going to have to make up their minds whether they want to try to block everything that a Democratic governor wants to do, or whether they see it, that it's in the interest of the Commonwealth to find ways that they can work together with the governor to do some things. I think in some areas, the Republicans are going to be inclined to say no to some of McAuliffe's initiatives, but I think there are other areas that have potential. Let's take reforming the standards of learning tests, the so-called high-stake testing that we do, I think, too frequently, especially in the elementary schools. I think there are a lot of folks, both Democrats and Republicans, who are saying that too many tests too frequently discourage creativity and innovation that we really need to inculcate within our youngsters so that they can compete in the increasingly complex global economy when they graduate. And I think you're going to see a move to change the way some of these tests are done, and I think that's going to be a bipartisan initiative. Another place where I think that the chances of a bipartisan deal would be in the area of ethics reform. I think no one really liked what happened with Governor McDonald and all the things, all the revelations that were involving gifts that were made to his family and to him. And I think that there's a lot of sentiment, both Republican and Democratic, to try to come up with some ethics reform so that the public can feel good about how we operate our system and how our elected officials do their work.
Again, our guest, David Toscano here from the Virginia Legislature. See, we have a brand new setup here in the studio for the phones. So let's see if I can do this properly. Our first caller today. Caller, are you with us?
Hello?
Yes. Good morning. Thank you so much. Jim's here by phone. Jim?
Yes. I have a question. David, you started the hour talking about a new governor coming into office in January. Looking locally, we are going to have a new Charlottesville City Circuit Court judge also coming into office in January. I wonder if you could tell the listeners a little bit about the judicial appointment process and remind them of the public forum that's going to be held tomorrow evening.
Maybe phrase it for me because I couldn't hear.
Jim, David couldn't hear you. Were fooling around with the microphones there. You were talking about an upcoming event.
But you want me to just sort of
rephrase that
again
for me quickly so I can pass that on to David.
All right. We're going to have a very important appointment by the state legislature in January, and that's for the local Charlottesville City Circuit Court judge. So I was asking if David could talk about the judicial appointment process and remind listeners that there's a judicial candidate forum for this appointment tomorrow evening in City Circuit Court.
All right, thank you. So David, Jim was calling to ask to remind people that there's an upcoming appointment for the local Charlottesville City Circuit Court judge, and wanted you to talk about that, how that happens, and give people a reminder about that.
Oh, that's great. Well, yes, Ted Hochschur, who served on the bench, distinguished Ted Hochschur, who served on the bench with distinction for a number of years, is retiring. He has to retire. It's mandatory in Virginia for him to retire at his age. And so the General Assembly will appoint a new judge in the next session. And it's important for the public to weigh in on this very critical appointment. One way they can weigh in is tomorrow night, I think it's 7 o'clock at the, I'm not sure which circuit court it's at right now, but there'll be a public forum where the judicial candidates who have offered themselves from this area right now will have an opportunity to take the public's questions. And I think it would be important for folks to participate. But beyond that, the real work is going to happen in the General Assembly because we get to appoint. And that's where the Republican split in the House versus the Democratic 2020 split in the Senate may play a role, because the Senate and the House both have to agree on a nominee. And that that's where some pretty interesting politics come into play. I've been pretty concerned about how judges are being chosen in Virginia. I think it's overly politicized. I think the other thing that's happening is that I think the Republicans are stocking the judiciary with people who have experience almost exclusively in prosecutorial matters. They're former prosecutors. I think we need more diversity on the bench around the Commonwealth. It's not to say that prosecutors don't make good judges. They can make good judges. It's just that folks who have a long experience in that area tend to think things differently than folks who have a long experience in other areas, and we just need a little more balance, I think.
All right, Jim, thanks for the call. I've plugged David's headphone into my headphone set now so we can hear everybody who calls up. Again, 434-979-0919. Your questions or comments for our guest today, David Toscano. He's the minority leader in Virginia's House of Delegates, representing the 57th District, the Charlottesville, Albemarle area.
Support today for WNRN comes from
T&N Printing, serving Virginia since 1982. In addition to printing and copying, T&N specializes in construction document management, as well as dry mounting, binding, and mail services. T&N offers FSC-certified printing, an internationally recognized standard for production and consumption of forest products. T&N Printing can be reached at 434-971-8976 and t-nprinting.com.
Mount Fair Vineyards, at the foot of the Blue Ridge Mountains, specializing in small batch Bordeaux-style red blends, you're invited to try Mount Fair's new wines, Amore, Equilibrium, and Twang, at 4875 Fox Mountain Road in Crozet. This Saturday, there's live music with Carl Anderson from 2 to 5. More info at mountfair.com.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks again for being with us today. Quick notes on the weather. There's a winter storm warning until 10 a.m. Monday morning. Today, predicted snow, sleet, and freezing rain up to 1 inch. 1 to 3 inches in the valley, little or none in Lynchburg and Richmond. Highs in the lower 30s tonight. Freezing rain, lows in the upper 20s. And then tomorrow on Monday, freezing rain early, change into all rain during the day. Highs in the mid 40s. So be safe out there. Again, our guest, David Toscano, call us up, 434-979-0919. I see the phone's ringing now. Call up, ask your question, make your comment. I fix the headphones so David can hear other people call and not have me have to transcribe them. David, you were talking about the Jim's comments about the upcoming judge, appointing the upcoming judge, and you made some comments about that made me think of gerrymandering and redistricting. Is that? Well, let me phrase my following comment out of my head. There were some, quote, technical adjustments made in 2013 to the Constitution. Talk about that, what happened in 2011 and then the technical adjustments in 2013.
Well, for some background, you know, under the Constitution, state legislatures are given the authority to draw new congressional districts and new state legislative districts every 10 years after a new census. And sometimes people don't realize this, but it's the state legislature that draws the lines for the congressional races. But we also draw lines for the state legislative races. And the founding fathers always contemplated that constituents and citizens would choose their representatives, not the other way around. And in fact, what's happening is just the other way around, is that these computer programs are so sophisticated now that legislators can choose their own constituents, draw their own lines, and therefore ensure that they can continue to win election. What happens with that is twofold. One is the party in control can draw the lines so that they can continue their control of the legislature. And secondly is that incumbents always make out. So you've got these districts that result that are either incredibly Republican or incredibly Democratic. And when that happens, when you choose the nominee, sometimes the extremes of both parties get in the mix. They choose the more extreme elements of the party to be nominated. And then when legislators get to Richmond, they have a hard time talking to each other because they're coming from totally different points of view. That does not help the political process. I think we're seeing that play out in Washington big time. The ability of people to make deals for the good of the country has been affected. And I think that a lot of that can be laid at the door of a partisan redistricting process.
So what happened in 2013 that qualifies as this technical adjustments that, depending on your party, some people were okay with and other people weren't?
Well, thanks for bringing me back to the question, Rick. Yeah, the so-called technical adjustments that were made were huge adjustments that were made by the Republicans in the state Senate in hopes that they could change the districts so that they could win back control of the Senate in 2015. The problem with those adjustments, however, is that they violated the rules of the House. And so they were ruled out of order and they didn't take effect. That was a very controversial decision that the Speaker of the House made, who, by the way, is a Republican. But that decision was made, and so those so-called technical adjustments, which were anything but technical, they really were substantive, could not be enacted. You don't want to be in a position where you redistrict every year, because if that's the case, incumbents will be in control forever. That's why the founders wrote into the Constitution that redistricting would occur every 10 years, not every year. And so we're going to have to watch for that in this General Assembly to see if anyone tries to change the lines again.
What are your, and again, I think many people, you are the minority leader, so you're representing the Democratic caucus in the Virginia State House of Delegates. For many people who are familiar with you as a person and your political focus, would say that you are quite the middle of the road person. You don't seem to play hardcore for the Democrats. Many of your conversation, your goals are to do the best thing overall, not just for your party. But when we come down to what seems to be a gerrymandering being the negative term of redistricting, it's whoever's in power. So if somehow it takes place that in 2011, is that where we want to be? No, 2021, I have no idea what year it is. In 2021, the Democratic Party is in charge. How do you make sure that we just don't change parties as the who's taking advantage of the laws?
I think that's a really good question. And, of course, those people in control often write the rules and they write the lines. I'd like to believe that I'm not going to change my mind about this, that I'm going to support a bipartisan or a nonpartisan redistricting commission, even if the Democrats are in control. And I think that on almost every radio show or every newsprint interview that I do, I put it down that I'm for that. So if I were in control when redistricting occurs, there are going to be so many statements that I've made saying that I'm in favor of nonpartisan redistricting that I hope the people would not allow me to do it even if I tried to. But, you know, my nature is to be bipartisan. Part of the balancing process for somebody in my position being the Democratic leader is to recognize that there are times when I have to be partisan, but they're not every time. And it's not good to be partisan every time because it doesn't always serve the best interest of the Commonwealth. And I try to find that balance every time I'm on the floor in the House.
11:27 here on WNRN and the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. Our guest today, David Toscano. We're talking about the upcoming legislature in the state of Virginia. The new, it starts in January of 2014.
January 8th, 2014.
In which case, many people will not be available for January 18th through mid to late March. So we're thankful to have David here today with us. We had a Jim, I believe, called back today. We were talking about appointing the upcoming local Charlottesville City Circuit Judge, and he says that the forum is at the Charlottesville Circuit Court on Monday night.
Thank you very much. I was looking on my cell phone to see where it was. It wasn't on my cell phone either, but I knew it was in one of the circuit courts, and I appreciate the information.
Thanks, Jim. Again, call us up with your question or comment, 434-979-0919. David's pretty available all the time, but you don't always get it here on 91.9. Take advantage of David being in the room with us today. So we're talking about redistricting and gerrymandering. What is the possibility, or is it even a good idea, that instead of the legislature creating these districts pretty much based on who's in charge and doing the best for themselves, to do it in a judicial manner?
Well, you could do it in a judicial manner. And the other way that we've talked about is this notion of creating a commission, much like Iowa does, much like California is doing now. And we're finding some interesting results. In Iowa, they have much more competitive elections because the district lines are drawn. So there are a number of Republicans and a number of Democrats in each district. So you don't have Democrats have an inherent advantage or Republicans having an inherent advantage. The way we would have to do it is probably through a constitutional amendment, which requires the legislature to pass a bill twice, once and before one election and then a second time, and then it goes on the ballot for the citizens to decide. You know, that's not an easy process, but I think a number of us are committed to trying it again. You know, Senator Creed Deeds has been a strong advocate of this. There is a bipartisan coalition that is formed around the state. The Sorenson Institute at the University of Virginia is involved in this. A number of prominent attorneys, including local attorney Lee Middleditch and McGuire Woods, has been leading the effort on this. So I think that if you get enough of the public who demand it, the legislature is not going to have any ability but to say yes. And that's my hope in the next few years.
Do you think that'll happen by 2021?
Well, it ought to happen early, because the closer you get to 2021, the more incumbents are worried about what happens with redistricting. And so they're less likely to give up their power. They're more likely to give up their power if they don't know whether they're going to even be there in 2021.
It sounds like that will be dependent on how each of the elections go for the next 2 years.
I think so. The irony is that, you know, the Republicans, to some extent, have to be a little scared about what might happen in 2021. And the only way you can get there is to have some more Democrats elected in the House. And that'll take the next election to do.
Our guest, David Toscano, here with us as we talk about a variety of topics. The upcoming Virginia legislature, which begins in January of 2014. David, you mentioned Creed Deeds. Certainly a big news topic over the last several weeks. Cree injured by his son Gus after an attempt to get him some help in our state mental health care in the state of Virginia. Not happened. Talk about that. Is this now, because last year you were here shortly after the Newtown gun incident, and everybody was convinced that there will be changes to our gun laws. Didn't happen. And so many people now are talking about how there will be changes made to the state's mental health care rules and setup. Talk about whether or not you think that's going to happen again.
Well, I think there will be some changes. You know, first of all, just let me tell your listeners that, you know, I was able to spend some time with Cree this week and his wife and his family, actually. And he wants to express all his thanks to the outpouring of sentiment and support and love that people have provided to him. He's been very gratified by that. And I can say also, you know, he, physically, he's doing a lot better. I mean, his wounds are healing physically. But even with that, you know, you never really heal from the wounds of what happened that day. I can tell you he's absolutely committed to trying to use this tragedy in his life to help make some changes for the good. I think there will be some changes. I think you're already seeing them happen. A couple of things have to happen administratively that can happen just within state government in terms of how we develop protocols for calling around for beds to see if a bed is available for somebody who's in crisis. Beyond that, we may have to fund some more beds. You know, to the extent there aren't beds available, especially in rural areas, we may have to put some money in the budget to do that. And I think that Governor McDonnell is going to put money in his budget. This will be the last budget that Governor McDonnell submits to us. And then the legislature will probably support enhanced funding too. Now, how much is not clear. There's certainly a lot of work that needs to be done. But this is going to give us the opportunity to revisit the things that we did in the aftermath of Virginia Tech, back in 2007, and see how we need to change the way we're doing things, because some people fall through the cracks, and we can't let that happen.
11:34 here on the Wake Up Call. You're welcome to call your question or comment, 434-979-0919. Our guest today, David Toscano.
L. Oppelman, serving Lynchburg for 122 years. In addition to loans, L. Oppelman deals in jewelry, musical instruments, rifles and handguns, game systems, TVs, cameras and tools, with new inventory arriving every day. L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street, downtown Lynchburg.
Boonesboro Shopping Center, Lynchburg's shopping destination with shops like Loft, Francesca's, Joseph A. Bank, Chico's, and Talbot's, plus local boutiques and fine dining. It's Boonesboro Shopping Center for gifts and your grocery list. You can find Boonesboro Shopping Center on Facebook for weekly specials and events.
Hello, I'm Jessie from the United Way Thomas Jefferson area. The Greater Charlottesville Community Health Coalition is a group of nonprofit organizations and interested parties whose mission is to assist uninsured and underinsured persons in our community to make an informed decision in response to Affordable Care Act requirements. We have developed a website that consolidates information available from the federal and state governments, www.cvilleenrolls.org, and we have certified application counselors available to the community to assist with answering questions and helping to sign up for health insurance. For more information, please visit us online at cvilleenrolls.org or call 434-972-1702 to speak with me, the coalition coordinator. I'm Jesse, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org. With your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you for being here with us. You can see a little ice particles coming down the air now. I hope you're inside safe. And if you're driving, please assume that those others on the road suck at driving, so be extra careful. David Toscano here in the studio with us. He's the state delegate representative of the 57th District at Charlottesville and parts of Albemarle. He's been there since 2006. Also leads the Minority Caucus in Virginia's House of Delegates. David, we were talking about mental health care, the tragedy with Cree Deeds and his family. Back in the late half of the summer, I had a representative from the Virginia, the Richmond area of NAMI, the National Association of Mental Illness. And we talked about how everyone considers it to be a key issue. And every year it gets discussed. And every year nothing happens.
Well, to some extent, that's true, and to some extent, that's false. As we were talking on the break, there are moments of opportunity to make change. And however, how terrible the tragedy of Virginia Tech, it did give us an opportunity to make some changes. And we did make some changes. And there was more money put in the budget. Then the recession hit, and some of that money was taken away. Now we have another tragedy. It's really heightened the awareness of people about this to this problem. I'm seeing people all the time. They're always coming to me and asking me how Cree is doing, and the next thing out of their mouth is, I've got a brother. I've got a brother-in-law. I've got a mother. I've got someone who has a need, and that need is not being served. So we now have another moment of opportunity, and we seize it, I hope, in this General Assembly session. Now, again, ultimately, constituents will make a judgment as to whether we've seized it appropriately or not. But this is our moment. We need to take advantage of it and do what we can. Now, you know, part of that is related to how we provide the services in our community. Your NAMI people talked a lot about the deinstitutionalization of folks so that they can live in the community. That comes at a cost. You know, when you close down a mental health facility, a hospital, you got to be places for people to go. If they don't have a place to live, they end up doing things that might end up in jail. And we've got thousands of people who have mental health issues who are in jail primarily because of these issues that led them to do something. It really isn't appropriate place to put people who have those kind of problems. We've got to find ways in the community we can better serve them.
Call us up if you have a question or a comment for David. Currently talking about Cree Deeds and the mental health care. You mentioned the upcoming budget probably having some, including some of this funding for some of the changes that many people believe need to be made. Governor McDonnell gets to put in the last budget, even though that will be discussed after his last day?
Isn't that interesting? This goes back a long ways in Virginia. The governor has, well, first of all, we have two-year budgets. The governor's first two-year budget is presented by that governor 2 years into his term. I guess the theory is that if you're elected in November, it's almost impossible to put together a budget that you could submit in January. So the governor has the first of his two-year budgets in the midpoint of his term and the last of his two-year budgets right at the end of his term. Then the legislature, as they say, works its magic on the budget. You know, so that's the check and balance here. The legislature has tremendous power over the budget. So we're going to look at Governor McDonnell's last two-year budget in this next session. Governor McAuliffe will have his input into that because he can make budget amendments at the end, and the legislature will have pretty much the final say on what that budget looks like.
All right, because our new governor, Governor Terry McAuliffe, is in April of each budget year when he gets a chance to look over it and say, yes, no, yes, no.
Well, he can do things before April, but April is a critical time because that is the so-called veto session. That's when the governor sends down any changes to any bills that he wants, including the budget, because the budget is a bill. It's just a bigger bill than anything else. And we have what's called line item veto in Virginia, where you can, unlike the federal system, where the governor can just strike a line out of the budget or insert a line into the budget, and then we'll have to vote on it in April. So the governor has his shot, but we're the final disposer of the budget, and we do that in April.
Here's a call that came in from Barbara. Barbara's hearing lots of negative things about the local housing authority, Charlottesville Housing Authority. What are any of your or state's plans for housing authority?
That interesting question. The local housing authority is largely controlled by the locality, and to the extent that there are issues, they're going to have to be addressed by the locality. I've been hearing a lot of concerns, too. Most of the housing authority money comes from the feds. It does not come from the state. We have certain provisions in our code related to housing authorities, but we're not a funder of housing authorities. That's a relationship between the locality and the federal government. It's increasingly challenging because there's less and less money flowing to housing authorities, and there are greater and greater needs to upgrade the infrastructure of those facilities.
Do you find, and again, back to the housing authority, you talk about how the funding comes from the federal government. Are there issues? I mean, the funding comes from the federal government, but does the state government just sit on the side and look at that? Are there issues, whether it's the housing authority, whether there are other issues where the relationship is strictly between the federal government and the local government, and the state just sits on the side going, I don't know, I can't do anything about that? Or are you sitting there going, you know what, we're not officially involved, but here's how we're going to help either or both sides?
Well, in Virginia, we have a housing commission, and they do look at the relationship between housing authorities and localities. Largely, they stay out of it. Largely, it's a federal-local thing. But we do put in rules for, what powers a housing authority may have to condemn property, for example, for public use, and tear down that property to build something else or do something else. But generally speaking, it's a local issue, and it's a relationship between the locality and the feds.
All right, back with our guest, David Toscano here. Phone lines are open. You're welcome to come on the air. You just don't have to pass your question through. Through our today's producer, 434-979-0919. Call us up. David is the minority leader in Virginia's House of Delegates. David, upcoming, the session starts on January 6th, January 8th. January 8th of 2014. So a month from now. So you have, I would assume that you already have thoughts in your mind about what bills you plan to put forth this upcoming session. Can you share any of those?
Well, sure. You know, you talked about nonpartisan redistricting. I'll have a bill that will enact that in Virginia. I've been supportive of that for years. I'll have another bill on that. I'm not sure where it's going to go, but I will have another bill on that. I'm going to put in a bill on ABC. We were going to talk about the incident here in Charlottesville where a young woman and her friends were detained and guns were pulled in the parking lot of the Harris Teeter. I don't think that ABC agents ought to be brandishing firearms to enforce rules for underage possession of alcohol. You know, underage possession is a serious matter, but it's not the kind of matter, unless somebody is doing something else, that you ought to be brandishing firearms to enforce. I'm going to have a bill in on that. I have had some concerns about this huge vehicle that they have. I think that it costs the Commonwealth about $750,000, the so-called SWAT team vehicle. I'm not sure the ABC ought to be purchasing vehicles that are that expensive in nature. So I've got some concerns about the ABC, and I'm going to try to put in some legislation on that. I've been working on some legislation, and you know, this isn't all that sexy, but it's something that's related to public health, on tanning beds and the ability of people under 18 to access use of a tanning bed without parental consent. You know, it's kind of interesting. We have a huge problem with melanoma, and you know, we're letting youngsters go off on their own and put themselves at some risk. You know, I think we're looking at some legislation on that. There's some legislation that the county and the city have asked us to propose. We're looking at some of those things. So you know, right now I've got about 20 bills that I'm looking at. Realistically, I can't put in 20 bills with my position as the Democratic leader in the House. I've got to be doing a lot of other things too. So I've got to be very, very focused on what I put in and focus on those things I have a reasonable chance of getting passed.
So back to the ABC real quick. By the way, I think some of those are fascinating, and I think I'm interested in the tanning bed issue. I'm sure that there are some people out there going, that's nothing for the government to get involved in.
Oh, absolutely, and there are all kinds of interesting questions about parental consent. You know, a long time ago, we had this huge issue about whether parents ought to give consent to a youngster who might want to have an abortion. And there were a number of folks who argued that you couldn't allow that to occur. We do have parental consent in Virginia, so absent an emergency, you have to get the permission of your parents if you're under 18. You know, there's some questions about that. Why as to tanning beds, why should you have parents give consent for kids to go and do that? So those are some issues. You know, I haven't decided whether to put the bill in, but people have asked me to do it, and I'm thinking about that.
Being a good representative, listening to your citizens coming up with ideas, at least for discussion before the January 8th start to the session.
Well, you know, exactly. I mean, part of the things you realize if you've been doing this as long as I have, that sometimes an idea seems really interesting to you, but then you start to talk a little more with people and people say, well, what about this? What about this? What about this? And then you find out that maybe the idea that seemed interesting on its face, if you're really listening to people, you find out maybe it's not such a good idea.
And how do people get in touch with you?
They can call my office, which is 220-1660, or they can go online at davidtoscano.com and send me an email. I'm around, so get to me now, because when January 8th rolls around, I will be back here on weekends, but I'm pretty much tied up from 6:30 in the morning to 10 at night doing the people's business in Richmond.
And while I'm thinking about it, a thank you to Carmen at your office who helped me set up your visit today. So thanks to Carmen at your office.
Yeah, Carmen's terrific. She's my chief of staff, legislative aide. And, of course, I got a former mayor working for me, too, David Brown. A lot of people know him. He's spending a lot of time in my office, and he goes to Richmond, too, because I need that help down there.
434-979-0919. Call with your question or comment for David. So, David Toscano, minority leader in Virginia's House of Delegates and the state delegate representative of the 57th District. You mentioned potential bills for the ABC. And because of the event that happened in April or May, sometime in the spring, at the Charlottesville, one of the Charlottesville Harris Teeters, that also brought up the discussion about whether or not ABC should even exist, or certainly in terms of selling alcohol. Should the state be out of that business and selling of alcohol be a private enterprise?
And you know, we've had that discussion here, I think, before, because one of the first things that Governor McDonald proposed was privatizing the ABC and using the monies that were generated by the sale of the ABC to put into transportation. That's an idea that on its face doesn't look too bad until you start looking at the numbers and you realize that the Commonwealth of Virginia makes a lot of money from ABC operations. They also have the ability to control how liquor stores look, how they market their products, where you locate them. For those reasons, I think people began to step back and say, well, I'm not sure privatization makes a lot of sense. If you were to privatize ABC, you would get a good chunk of money right off the top, several hundred million dollars, but you'd lose all your revenue long term that goes to help fund schools, public safety, mental health, the things that people consider important to fund from the Commonwealth. You also lose control over potentially where these ABC stores are placed. So you would have a situation potentially like New York or Connecticut, where you could have a liquor store on almost every corner, and that brings with it all kinds of other issues for folks. So I think that people on balance decided that McDonald's idea was not a tremendously good idea. I really would have to be convinced before I would support privatization. Of course, that's a little different issue than the one with Harris Teeter. And you still have to enforce underage possession of alcohol, whether or not ABC is privatized or remains a state agency.
David Toscano with us, 11:51 here on WNRN. And a reminder, when you contribute at least $5 per month to WNRN, you become a VIP member and can win something every week. You can win tickets to see John Mayer at the Richmond Coliseum on December 13th. You can win movie tickets to see Out of the Furnace at any Regal Cinemas. So become a member at WNRN.org and win tickets and music every week from us here at WNRN. Just a few minutes left with David. David, the Affordable Care Act, a national issue for the most part. It does affect or does have state concerns as to whether or not each state takes its Medicare donations is the word that comes to mind, although that's not the right word. Do you believe or what do you believe should happen on the state of Virginia in terms of the Affordable Care Act and the money that goes with that? And has the Affordable Care Act hurt the Democratic Party in the recent elections that took place in November and in terms of ongoing discussions about other topics?
Boy, that's a huge question. But let me take it in pieces. All right. First of all, the Affordable Care Act, the principle behind it was that if you can expand the number of people in the pool, the insurance pool, and they all pay into the system, it will reduce the costs of everyone. It will spread the risk across a larger number of people. And that's why you've had such a focus on people signing up for the healthcare exchanges, because the more people in the mix, the less the cost. The issue for the states, one of the issues left for the states, comes from the Supreme Court decision on the Affordable Care Act last year, which basically said that the act was constitutional, but the federal government could not force the state to expand Medicaid. Now, Medicaid is a joint federal-state program, not like Medicare. Everybody over 65 qualifies for Medicare. Medicaid is a joint state federal program that is designed to ensure people in poverty, primarily women and children and the elderly who are in poverty and may have to have some assistance in terms of their nursing home care. In Virginia, 50% of the Medicaid budget is picked up by the feds right now. What the Medicaid expansion proposal was from the feds is that for the first 3 years, the feds would pick up 100% of the cost of Medicaid expansion. Medicaid expansion would have allowed some 400,000 people in Virginia who are presently uninsured to get insurance. The debate going on in Richmond is whether we shouldn't take the Medicaid expansion. And there's a lot of resistance from Republicans to doing that. I favor a Medicaid expansion for a couple reasons. One is you got 400,000 Virginians out there who are uninsured, who would become insured if we expanded Medicaid. Secondly, it would mean that a lot of these folks who are uninsured would not be using our emergency rooms for primary care. They would not be going there if they had a sore throat. They would not be going there if they had a minor illness the way they are now. And that would cut the costs to taxpayers who have to provide for indigent care at places like University of Virginia. It would also help the bottom line of our community hospitals and our big teaching hospitals like UVA. Third, Medicaid expansion would create 40,000 new jobs in Virginia, which is good. We need to have new jobs in Virginia. And finally, our tax monies under Medicaid expansion would stay in Virginia. Right now, we're paying taxes to implement Affordable Care Act in the entire country. Those taxes are coming out of our pocket. They flow into Washington. And they will be sent to states who accept Medicaid expansion. So New York, Connecticut, and other states who accept Medicaid expansion will be getting a portion of our Virginia tax dollars to fund to help people who are in need in their states. I think we ought to keep the money here. We ought to have it coming back here to help Virginians who are really in need. I can give you the other side of at some point in time, but that's the short version.
But it is, the conversation has certainly divided many people as to what should happen. And with the errors that took place in October with the start of the online website for purchasing your participating in the Affordable Care Act, and the negative aspect that has grown over that because of the .gov site, did that hurt the Republican, the local Democratic elections in October, or excuse me, in November?
I don't think it hurt the local elections. I do think it had an effect on the statewide elections. McAuliffe's numbers, you know, his polling numbers indicated that he was up at least 4.5%. By 4.5%, he won by 2.5%. And I think what happened is right at the end of the election, people were a number of folks who were leaning Republican in their typically lean Republican in their voting had decided they were going to vote for McAuliffe, and they flipped over to Cuccinelli at the very end, partly because they got more concerned about Obamacare. And I think we saw it in some of our state house races. Now, there's a real debate about this now within the Democratic Party. I was one who helped operate and run those state races, and I feel that they had some effect on our races. We had a number of people who were ahead, but ultimately lost by several hundred votes, and I don't have any other way to explain it but that the public was changing their views about things right at the end of this statewide campaign.
You talk about helping with these state elections. I was working with Carmen at your main office so we could set up a date for this, and she said, well, I need to wait. We're scheduling some things. And I kept thinking, I wonder if David's going to be invited to be somehow involved in Governor McAuliffe's office.
Interesting question. I haven't sought an appointment with the administration. I really do enjoy my job. Mostly I like making sure that I have more time with my family. I think that would take even greater time away from my family. I really don't want to do that. There are great opportunities, but the legislature I enjoy quite a bit, and so I'm not going to be taking anything there unless something happens all of a sudden that I'm not aware of now.
All right, last chance. There are topics that I have a whole list of things that we didn't discuss. The session starts in a month. What's one conversation that you feel is going to be so important that we haven't touched on that people need to be following that through the news or contacting you or their representative that's going to be a key issue?
Well, you know, I think we did talk about all of the key issues, but it's funny. Legislative sessions have a way of gathering their own momentum, and something that you wouldn't predict would be the big issue ends up being the big issue. You remember the transvaginal ultrasound? I mean, nobody knew that was going to be that issue, and all of a sudden, I never even knew that term until we started dealing with that bill, and then it became a common phrase that was used not only in polite company, but also on the late night talk show. So it's hard to predict. Sometimes things happen and they gather their own momentum. I would encourage people to make sure you sign up for my legislative updates. Make sure you're watching what's happening in Richmond. Let us know by email what you think, because that can make a huge difference in how I vote on an issue, hearing from my constituents.
Also, sunlight.com. There's a great website.
Richmond
to visit.
Sunlight. Richmond Sunlight.
RichmondSunlight.com. It allows you to see who's doing what in terms of bills and how each bill is going. David, thank you so much for being here today.
It's great. I enjoy coming on every time I hear.
Oh, thank you so much. And I be careful out there. The weather is, let's see, I don't have the paper in front of me, but sleet, snow, freezing rain through the night. And then Monday, freezing rain in the morning until about 10 o'clock when it'll turn to rain later on. So be careful out there. Next week, we'll be talking about how Christmas is celebrated throughout the world. UVA professor of anthropology, Ray Wagner, how Christmas and other winter holidays are done all throughout the world. Thanks, everybody. Les Temps Perdue up next.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The wake-up call is produced by Brandon Wong. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.